The shir is Leila Nishmas Ephraim ben Asher and Shal. We started last week just the very, very beginnings of the Melacha Bishul. I can say with a lot of confidence, we're not going to finish Bishul today. It's a rather long Melacha, but we'll try to get just a little bit started into it, and then hopefully Hashem, at the end of the summer, we'll pick up from that point. So when we speak about the Melacha Bishul or the Melacha Ofer, the two terms are used interchangeably, even though technically one refers to baking, one refers to cooking, but in terms of in Chayav and Shabbos, one is Chayav for either one of the two processes. So one thing that quickly comes to the front is the notion of fire, the notion of a flame, the notion of heat. And in order for Bishul to be violated, one has to cook with a flame. What is the cook? What's called Bishul Be'esh or Bishul Be'or. And the Mishnah quickly draws a distinction between other ways of heating up food, which don't involve an eish. And the Mishnah talks in the third breakfast of Shabbos about Bishul Machama. If a person cooks in the sun, takes an egg and heats it up in the sun, is that considered to be Bishul or not? So the Mishnah says absolutely not. The Mishnah says that Bishul Machama is not an Issa D'Oraisa, and under certain circumstances, it's not even an Issa D'Rabbanan, which is also a question of itself. How did that become normal things that go down to D'Rabbanan? How did things become Mutal L'Gamim? Well, otherwise, that's what the Mishnah says. That Bishul Be'esh is an Issa D'Oraisa, Bishul Machama is actually Mutal L'Chadchila. The question is, why is that so? Why is it that the flame, the Eish, the fire, plays such a major role in terms of Ilchus Bishul? So Rashi seems to say, that's the way at least the way Moshe Feinstein understood Rashi, Rashi seems to say that the issue that's playing out here is nothing unique to Bishul per se. This is not what we would call localized in Ilchus Bishul, but rather this is a theme that we've spoken about many, many times that permeates all Ilchus Shabbos. That's the notion of kederach, doing things in a normal fashion. Whenever you do a malach in a normal fashion, that's an issur deraisa. Whenever you do a malach in an abnormal fashion, that's not going to be a deraisa. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be mutter, but at least it's not going to be a deraisa. And we've already seen sometimes doing things kiryach yad, they actually translate to being literally mutter, and sometimes not. I had an interesting shot on Friday. I had a call from a group of NCSYers who are in Spain right now. And they were supposed to walk for an hour each way on Shabbos morning to where the shul was and where the meals were. And small technical problems, it was 100 degrees in Spain. It probably would have felt like yesterday outside in the Burger Field. So they were very concerned with a group of teenagers to walk for an hour each way. And last we checked, the Erev in Barcelona wasn't up. There hasn't been Erev in Barcelona probably since the days of Ramban. So there was no Erev in the place that they were staying. So the question was, what should they possibly do in terms of water? So there was very, very real concern in terms of dehydration. So there is a discussion that goes about, let's say a person is a potential chola, means right now they're not literally, nothing's wrong with them right now. On the other hand, they have a certain kind of medical condition, so they need heart medication, other kind of medication, and it's potentially dangerous for them to travel without that medication immediately available to them. The post can make that under those circumstances, the person would be permitted to carry something kiliachayad. And we don't insist that they stay in the house to buy Shabbos. They can carry something, the medicine kiliachayad, in an abnormal fashion, since it would only be a durabon anyway, and it's almost like a makam chola, that would be permissible. So to when you have so many kids, the shash that someone's going to dehydrate is very, very real. After many years of answering shout outs to SY summer program, so I can tell you with certainty that we've had more than one case of people dehydrating under less severe weather conditions. So I thought that maybe there would be grounds to be out there, perhaps to have them carry the water in an abnormal fashion. Then we have a whole discussion, practically speaking, what does that mean? How exactly can you carry in abnormal fashion? So we're trying to think of different kutsim. You know, put it into your belt, you put it in your arm. You got 50 NCSY kids walking around the streets of Spain with water in there. Strange situation. Then, the same way when the doctor speaks to a patient, you know, sometimes the doctor takes like the medical intake, so they ask a lot of questions. Sometimes you think the questions are irrelevant, very often they're very important, because sometimes you're missing one small piece of information. So as I was talking to the people a little bit more, so the information came out, they said, well, we have two non-Jewish security guards that are accompanying us wherever we go. I said, Ishkarev, like good morning, so why didn't you even tell me that at the beginning? So I said, Yesh Makom Hokal, that I'm really Yakum, but Makom Choylem of Rab, potential Cholish Yesh Pesakana, for kid to get dehydrated in the middle of Spain is a very, very serious concern.
How's that different than my hiring a bus to drive them?
How's that different than hiring, what do you mean, for them to be in a bus? Right. So we usually assume that for a Jew to be in a car, a bus, a vehicle of transportation on Shabbos is considered to be such a terrible violation of Zilzul, of Shabbos, of Shabbason, of Dechol, that and also only because driving has become so associated with blatant cool Shabbos, so we will stay as far away as possible putting somebody into a car on Shabbos. Whereas over here, this is not as blatant. This is having a guy doing malachas, which I don't do about it anyway, probably, because probably these streets are not real, which is around their ISIS for a variety of reasons. The same way our neighbors are probably not just around their ISIS, although I haven't checked the traffic patterns in the Spanish cities recently. So we're going to assume that they're only the Rabbanim. So that's Shvus Tishvus with Machom Tzorech and Machom Chayl and things of that nature. Anyway, getting back to the story. So doing this Kareachiyat is not a green light all the time, but it does generally knock things down to being a Rabbanim, and sometimes even being Mutter. So Ramesh interpreted Rashi and Shabbos, so that's what's going on here as well. If you take a survey and ask people, how do you cook things? They would say, you cook things in an oven, in a stove. And one Meshuggah will say, well, you cook things in the sun. Well, the sun, you're crazy. Meshuggah, you're crazy. So Rashi says, therefore, it's considered to be Kaleach Hayad. And it's a type of Kaleach Hayad that's not only not the Arayis, but it's even actually Mutter Lechatchila. Why exactly does that translate to be Mutter Lechatchila? We said that it's always not clear. How do you make that final jump to be Mutter Lechatchila? So the Eglei Tal was written by the Avnei Nezis. The Eglei Tal has a Yisod in Hilchos Shabbos that sometimes Kaleach Hayad becomes Mamash Mutter and sometimes not, depending on whether the change relates to the Etzem HaMalach itself. There are different types of Kaleach Hayad. The Eglei Tal was not a brisk, he was a Chassidisha, but he has a lot of brisk kinds of the formulations of Tyrus. So the Eglei Tal says there are really two different halachas, there are two dinim of Kaleach Hayad. It's Kaleach Hayad, where the malach itself is not really done in a different manner. It's just that you as a gavra have done it different. Where sometimes, within the cheftz itself, there's actual change within the malach itself. Say, Lamashal, if a person stands on his head and he does malacha, the malach itself hasn't been changed. The person is changing. But sometimes the etzem malacha, there's a change in. So when I cook an egg in the sun, is that a shina b'tzad a gavra, or is that a shina b'tzad a cheftza? So the Eglital says that that's called that's a different chetzelig amrim, because everybody knows that something that's cooked in the sun is radically different than something that is cooked in the fire. So there's a difference in terms of the object itself in the manner of cooking, not just in terms of I press this button or I press that button, but the etzem chetzel is different. So when the Eglei Tal tries to describe why is that so, scientifically, factually, why is that so, that something that's cooked in the sun is different, so he quotes Gemaras and Lomda Shvach Eitzim Bapas, with a whole razzle-dazzle halachic / philosophical principles to try to explain why something that's cooked in the sun is different halachically than something that is cooked in a flame. So I remember when I was first reading this thing like that, so I thought it was a little bit strange that, you know, lamais, it's a cooked egg, man, afkamina, the egg cooked in the sun, egg cooked in the fire, what's the difference? It's the same egg. So what kind of halacha is that? That is different. So there was one saying over the Shia, many years ago, I was saying over this chabura, and I said it not in the most respectful way, I said I didn't really understand what I was saying. I said, come on, we all know scientifically it's the same cooked egg, what's the difference, cooked in the sun, cooked in the fire? So somebody who actually knew something about science raised their hand, and they said, Rabbi Sadlovsky, I probably wasn't even Rabbi Sadlovsky at the time, I think it was Tlalbachar when Yeshiva saying this chabura, said, I have to differ with you that the Eglital was 100% right. Whether the Eglital understood the physics or not, I don't know, but he said that the physics is different. He said that something that's cooked in the sun and cooked in the flame, so he explained to me is a different chalos kind of cooking. The molecules are going this way, going that way. I'm still not sure what he was talking about. But anyway, he said that the Eglei Tal was mechavi into it physically, and there is actually a difference between the two. So the bottom line is Rashi says that anything cooked in the sun is called Kaleach Hayad. Of course, the problem with this approach of Rashi is that this may change according to time and place. We've said this many times, that Kaleach Hayad is only as true as where you live and when you live. So something may have been abnormal b'zman chazal, and may become normal b'zman hazeh. So that's what Rav Moshe understood, and Rashi writes that according to this, his understanding of Rashi, his understanding of the need for a flame, if you would live in a society where cooking in the sun is normal, so then that would be a potential deraisa. So you move the clock forward, go to Eretz Yisrael, and solar heating, so it's very, very normal. So you can't call cooking in the sun not normal anymore. It's very normal. And it's in this context that Rav Moshe has his famous dream about microwaves. Rav Moshe was asked the question way, way back in the 60s or so, back about the use of microwaves. So Rav Moshe analyzed the microwave, and he said, a microwave is pretty much the lach equivalent of the sun. It's not really a flame. And he writes that when he was asked to shayla, it was fairly abnormal, so we didn't have microwaves. So one Meshuggah guy decides to cook something in a microwave, so maybe you can argue that would be okay in Shabbos. But Rav Moshe writes that if, leaving out the electricity or the other piece of the puzzle microwave, just in terms of the Malach of Bishul, it says, Rav Moshe, what's going to happen when you come to a time in history when microwaves are going to become normal? So Rav Moshe writes, it hasn't happened yet, but he writes, Rav Moshe understood the way the direction of cookie was going. So Rav Moshe writes, but it appears that it's going to be something that's going to catch on. It's very easy. So it's something that most people will probably do in a few years from now. So Rav Moshe was 100% right. So he says, once it becomes normal, then it will become. And he said, there I saw. So if a person, let's say, wants to cook up a cup of water or something in a microwave, wants to cook up some easy kind of food, some people don't cook steaks in microwaves, right? No, not likely, okay? But there are lighter kinds of foods that people can cook in a microwave. Cook eggs in a microwave. So if that's normal, then that becomes a potential malacha d'oraisa b'zman hazeh. That was the approach of Rav Moshe. In that famous chew about microwaves, so Rav Moshe, of course, Kedaka B'Kodesh does not use the Hebrew, modern Hebrew word for microwaves. He never uses modern Hebrew words for anything, Rav Moshe. He only uses the transliteration, like you write in Ksuba. So he writes, what's the din about a microwave? Mem, yud, kuf, resh, vav, vav, vav. And he just writes it out. And he has a chew about cars, so he doesn't use a modern Hebrew word. He just writes, kuf, aleph, resh. That's just the way he thought. He thought in Yiddish. He didn't think in modern Hebrew. So he just spelled out the words into Yiddish, and he wrote it. Anyway, get back to that story. So this was the approach of Rav Moshe. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach disagreed with Rav Moshe fundamentally in this entire circuit. Rav Shlomo Zalman argued that the role of fire in terms of Bishul is much more profound than just determining whether it's normal or not. But it actually touches upon the very essence of the Malacha. The very definition of Bishul requires a flame. And if you don't have a halachic flame, then that is just not Bishul. That is part of the ABCs. That is a definitive part of Bishul. Nothing to do with because it's normal. That is just objectively part of the definition of Bishul. Even if that approach of Shlomo Zalman is true, which would of course be a bit cooler B'zman HaZeh, because that would be matir microwaves in the sense of Bishul D'oraisa. Again, it didn't say it's mutter, it's also for other reasons, but that would solve the Bishul problem. And that would solve Bishul B'chama, that would be matir solar heating B'zman HaZeh, also on Shabbos. A lot of kudos would emanate from Shlomo Zalman's position. One can understand Shlomo Zalman's Yisod in one of two ways. Either one can understand Rav Shlomo Zalman is saying that it's a din in Bishul, it's a halacha. It's not just a practical because it's normal, but it's a din. That is the definition of Bishul. Rav Shlomo Zalman means to say that's the definition of Bishul in Hilchos Shabbos because of Mishkan. I mean, Shabbos is patterned after Mishkan. And Mishkan always was with fire. They didn't use microwaves in the Mishkan. They didn't use soul heating in the Mishkan. So since all the cooking done for the dyes, to extract the dyes in the Mishkan is all done with fire, so Bishul on Shabbos requires Eish. But that has nothing to do with other areas of halacha. Or no, was that a din klali? Was that a general statement that permeates kol Torah kula or Bishul? So one could have understood Rav Shlomo Zalman one of two ways. So Shlomo Zalman is very clear in which way he's going, because there's a Gemara in Pesachim that says, that speaks about Bishul B'chama, related to Bishul B'chama, in terms of Kotel Pesach as well. So the Sugya Bishul B'chama impacts on the din of Lo Sochul Men and Lo Vashem Mavushul B'mayim about Bishul Korban Pesach, which has absolutely nothing to do with Shabbos. And still the Gemara speaks about Bishul B'chama being a factor. So Shlomo Zalman says that you see that Bishul B'chama is not called Bishul, not just in Shabbos. It's not called Bishul, period. End of discussion. It's not called the Ma'aseh Bishul. So you have a major machlokes between Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman. What is the status of Bishul B'chama? And by extension, solar heating, by extension, microwaves, etc. According to Rav Moshe's approach, everything could be deraisa b'zman hazeh, because once it's normal, then it's automatically deraisa. According to Shlomo Zalman, normal has nothing to do with anything. That's not the name of the sugya. The name of the sugya is there flame, a fire, or no? There's no flame, no fire, nothing to talk about. So one of Shlomo Zalman's fascinating... Yes?
I was going to say, so in Israel, like, they have a lot of solar water heaters?
Right.
So then all those would be...
According to Moshe, they would all be deraisa. According to Shlomo Zalman, they may be derabanan, they may be mutar lagamri. Because even though
Bishul, in the case of a chola in Eretz Yisrael,
we would be more makel. According to Rav Moshe, there's really no difference in the two. According to Shlomo Zalman, we would be much more makel with any kind of solar heating than with regular heating. Right?
So according to Rav Moshe, cooking cooking an egg in the sun, which is a different thing.
That was still not the
oraisa, but he would consider the rabbanan.
So that's the question. The Gemara says the bishul b'cham itself is actually mutar lechatchila. Bishul b'toldos acham is a problem. So let's say I heat up something in the sun and then I use that item to cook an egg. So the Gemara says that would be asur mid rabbanan because that would get confused. You would confuse that with something that was heated up in a flame. Whereas if you just take an egg and put it out on the street and have it fry, so then that's bishul b'cham itself, and that would be even mutar lechatchila. Bizman chazal was mutar, probably mutar today also, because most people wouldn't do that. That's not called...
Even the Rabbanan.
Maybe we would, yeah. So next time, you may have been able to try that. Yesterday it was so hot, but try next time.
So there's a relatively new thing that's coming out called induction cooking, which is through magnetic fields. Yeah. Right. So if you put the pot on, right, you can touch it, it's not hot, but if you put a steamy pot on, then it will automatically get hot. There's no flame, there's nothing, not even electric to... necessarily to turn it on.
Right.
Right, similar to a
microwave. Right, so all these kinds of things are all going to be dependent upon this discussion. You have a lot of these things, you have these cooking with chemicals, all kinds of things. You open the bag, you open hocus pocus, the thing people want to travel. Right. The meals get heated up, there's no flame, there's no fire, there's nothing. So that's all going to depend on this. According to Moshe, once it's normal, once there's a $1 million industry on this, once they're selling it, then it's normal, and then it becomes the same as regular cooking. According to Rishon Zalman, none of these cases will be real vision. Okay. Right, this is going to be a big, big difference. Rav Shlomo Zalman had a fascinating raya to support his idea. It was from a sugya we just, I think, we made a mention, a reference to the sugya at the end of last week. Mishnah and the third part of Maseches of Shabbos speaks about Bishul B'chamei Teveria. If a person is cooking in the springs of Teveria, so is that considered to be Bishul or not? So the Gemara has a machlekes haTanaim about that. And the Gemara says that it depends on where the source of Chamei Teveria is. Is the source of the springs of Teveria a fire, or is the source of the springs of Teveria something that's not halachically a fire? So the whole discussion is the Pesach Shel Gehenna under Teveria or not. That's the whole tuffle in the Gemara. So again, whatever that means, not 100% clear what that means. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says he doesn't understand what the Gemara is talking about. If Ramesh is right, that all depends upon is it normal or not. So go to Teveria and take a poll of people in Teveria. Do you cook in the springs or not? If the answer is yes, so it's deraisa. If the answer is no, then it's not deraisa. Why does the Gemara make it sound like it depends? Is there an eish or not? It doesn't matter if there's an eish or not. If it's normal, it's also. If it's not normal, it's mutter. So Shlomo Zalman said that Gemara seems to bear out his theory that normalcy is not the only factor here. What really matters is there halachically an eish? And then you can discuss, is Chamei Teveria called an eish or not?
Does it have any bearing on
Bishul
Akku as well?
Oh, yeah, we'll get that in a second. It's a humongous, just as an aside, I mentioned Chamei Teveria. So the Gemara has a discussion about cooking the Korban Pesach in Chamei Teveria. There was a whole sugya about cooking Korban Pesach in Chamei Teveria. Is that called Bosham Mavusha B'mayim or not? Is that called Bishul B'cham, Bishul B'esh? So some of the later Chironim have a very interesting question. They say, wait a second, how did the Korban Pesach get to Chamei Teveria? So isn't that called the Yotze? Once it leaves the outskirts of Yerushalayim, once it leaves the walls of Yerushalayim, it becomes possible anyway. So the Achrayim start pilfering about how far is Teveria from Yerushalayim. They had no idea how far Teveria was to Yerushalayim. So they discuss. Like, exactly how long it's a 3-hour bus ride, and they exactly when it stops 16 times along the way. It's a long trip. So the answer to that question most probably is that the term Chamei Teveria doesn't only mean the hot springs in the city of Tiberias. It means any hot springs anywhere. So in theory, you can have a hot spring in Yerushalayim also. I don't know whether there is or not, but in theory, if you dig down, maybe you'll find a geyser, Old Faithful, will shoot up in the middle of the old city. So Chamei Teveria was just a phrase that was used to describe those hot springs coming up from the surface of the earth. So Tasha said, "Tomorrow, the guy's not schlepping the meat of Korban Pesach for the 3-hour bus ride to Hanar Pesach to Tiberias." Okay, anyway, getting back to our story. So probably the most important application of this discussion actually is not even Hilchos Shabbos. It's actually Bishul Akum, as you said correctly. How does all this play out in terms of another area of Halacha, namely Bishul Akum? So we spoke about this many times. The Mishnah says in the Avodah Zarah that mid the Rabbanon one's not allowed to eat food that was cooked by a non-Jew. It's a Gizeh Mishim Chastas, but the most show we're concerned that you might become too close socially with the non-Jews, you may come to intermarry with them, and therefore mid the Rabbanon Chazal wanted to nip the problem in the bud, and they made an Issa called Bishul Akum. There is a question as to what exactly that means. If a non-Jew cooked food for you, that's a problem. If the non-Jew prepared food in other ways, but it wasn't halachically cooked, so then that would be permissible. So what is the status of food that was prepared, let's say, for example, in a microwave? Let's say a non-Jew cooks raw food for you in a microwave. So some kinds of foods that are prepared in a microwave wouldn't be subject to Bishul Akum anyway. say if he cooks up a cup of water for you, water is anyway not bishalachim, because water you can drink without cooking. Anything that's nechal moshe chai, anything that can be consumed without cooking is not subject to bishalachim altogether. Let's say a man who cooks an egg. An egg is something that you can't eat it raw. Most people wouldn't eat raw eggs. And eggs are a nice kind of fancy food. You would serve it eggs at a real fancy meal. You have restaurant serve you eggs. So if a non-Jew cooks you an egg in a microwave, is that a problem or not? So many wanted to argue that depends on this machlokes in Hilchos Shabbos. If you go down the approach of Rav Moshe, that bishul microwaves is not called bishul because it's not normal, but once it becomes normal, so then it becomes a regular bishul. So then it's a regular bishul for Shabbos, it's a regular bishul for Bishalach, but that would be a real problem. So if a non-Jew would make eggs for you in a microwave, that would be a significant problem. If you go down the root of Rav Shlomo Zalman, that bishul nechama just doesn't exist, finished period, end of discussion, and not only in Shabbos, but in Korban Pesach as well, other areas of halacha as well, that eish is an integral part of the definition of bishul, so then bishul in a microwave would not be called bishul for the purpose of Bishalach. So that already appears, some folks can have that idea. There's a sefer in Bishalach called Chalkas bin Yamin. So it was written by Rav Chaim Kohn's son. Rav Chaim Kohn wrote the Bani HaShulchan in Nida and other areas of Halacha. Then his son wrote a very, very similar style sefer, Chalkas Bishalach, and other areas in Yerodea. So in that sefer, he writes like that, that he thinks that it should probably depend on the Shaila. If you hold like Rav Moshe, it should be a problem. Hold like Rav Shlomo Zalman, it should probably be okay. The problem is that there are people who have spoke to Rav Shlomo, who claim that they spoke to Rav Shlomo Zalman and asked him the Shaila itself, and he told them the Chumrah. He told them that you can't rely on the heter of Bishalachim in a microwave, which again, I'm not questioning that version of what he said. I don't understand it exactly. Why Mechatese? So that should be so, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman's argument. So years ago, there used to be the Shaila used to come up. This was a Dunkin' Donuts Shaila. It was a famous Shaila in Dunkin' Donuts. About can you go into Dunkin' Donuts and have a non-Jew make eggs for you? So there used to be two different psakim. There were some Dunkin' Donuts that would permit that, again, Dunkin' Donuts under Ashkachas. Some Ashkachas would permit that and others would not. So for some period of time, there was a discrepancy between the standards in Tinek and the standards in the five towns that the Dunkin' Donuts in Tinek would be makil. They would let the non-Jews just make the make the eggs for you, and they were relying on the svar of Shlomo Zalman. Assuming Shlomo Zalman's mati bishalachim and microwaves, that would be done anyway. So make them very easily, and a shalach bishalachim would tend to be very makel. And in the five towns, they used to have a sign on. Anyone remember the sign in the five towns? There used to be a sign in the five towns that said that you should press the button on the microwave yourself and want eggs. You don't remember that sign? Like, I think years ago they had that sign.
Elizabeth was way before Tina.
What?
First time I was in Elizabeth, so like several of my types in Tina.
Yes. The one in Tina was probably just following the one in Elizabeth as the standards, because it's still on rubber tights. I don't know, death on rubber tights. So anyway, that's what used to be. I don't know what the signs say now, but we were told that the issue is really a moot issue at this point, because there are no eggs in any Dunkin' Donuts anymore. The eggs that are made are not real eggs. You'll leave it at that. They're not Olo Shukim Malachim. They may not be Royal Achilles. I don't know where exactly, but we don't serve them for our Sunday morning.
I remember the class.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, leads to it would be real eggs, so then there would be a machlokes.
Yeah,
yeah. 3 minutes. Okay, good.
Is it like hard-boiled eggs in a package, like in the supermarket that have OU on them? So are those?
No, they're not hard-boiled. Yet.
Yeah,
they're just
they sell hard.
They say cooked eggs.
Already cooked, already peeled.
Yeah, pre-peeled. Like there's one on Shoprite, right? It's in the
Yeah, we've reached a point people can't even make a hot. That's like the only thing I know how to cook is a hard-boiled egg.
Does that mean there's a you turned on the stove? It has OU on it,
presumably.
Interesting. Yeah. Either that, or I
can you argue that it's not?
I mean, a hard-boiled egg is not all shem
malach. It's a real egg. Right.
You wouldn't serve.
Right. You wouldn't serve
hard-boiled. You would serve fresh egg.
Right. Right. So that's a bishalachim question about factory kind of stuff. You know, can we assume that there's no bishalachim on factory-made stuff? The Moshe had a tzad l'hokum because there's no way in the world you're ever going to figure out who the guy was who cooked. So how are you going to marry his daughter? You have no idea who he is. And you'll find the guy who pressed the button in the egg factory, 1,000 miles from here. So that was one possible tzad. The OU relies on that tzir of other things, like in tuna fish, they rely on that cooler because tuna fish is steamed, it's not really cooked. So I don't know what else is going into that egg shadow. So maybe there's somebody who's actually pressing the button on the eggs, Or could be that they're relying on the fact that it's a hard-boiled egg itself is not really olah shulchan malachim. Also, you wouldn't serve a hard. It's not, you wouldn't serve a hard-boiled egg at a meal. You'd serve an omelet maybe at a meal. You'd serve a nice sunny side up or something. But you wouldn't serve.
Well, with salad sometimes they serve
it. Oh, I mean you would. I mean you would serve it. You cut it into salad. I don't know. I don't. I have to think about that. I have to speak to you about something else today. So I'll try to remember to ask them that question. Okay. Fine. Okay, anyway, get back to that story. So Bishul Be'esh is critical. That's a major part of Bishul, either from Be'esh's approach or from Shlomo Zalman's approach. When we speak about Eish, so there is a further question about just what role Eish really has in the following sense. Let's say a person cooks something in a utensil that was on the fire, but right now is not on the fire. So that's what the Rishon used the phrase. Kli Rishon al Gabi Eish, in contrast to Kli Rishon Shlo Gabi Eish. So Kli Rishon al Gabi Eish means I have a pot of water, and the water is boiling, and I take a raw egg and I throw it into the pot. That's called and the fire's on. So that's called the Bishul and the Kli Rishon al Gabi Eish. That's a Bishul Goma. That's a Bishul Derais. There's no question about that. But what if I take that pot off the fire, still boiling hot the water, and I throw the egg in? Will it cook? I guess.
Depends how long it's supposed to cook.
You see how much I just don't know how to cook eggs. I never cooked an egg in my life.
Does your mother know this?
Does your mother know this yet? Like, they love cooking eggs, but can they have cooking eggs? So, so the Rishon used the phrase, what would the din be if you take a pot off the fire? So it's a clear Rishon, because at one time was on the flame, on the fire. On the other hand, right now it's not on the fire anymore. That's a clear Rishon, Shalom Agab Yaish. So would we call that Bishul Deraiso? Or maybe that's not called Bishul Deraiso. So on the one hand, there was an Eish. It's not like the Bishul Becham or the Michael Rebbe Chaim Tiver. It's not like those cases where there was no flame anywhere around. On the other hand, there's no flame right now in front of us. So what is the din? Is that called Bishul Derais? Is that called Bishul Derabanan? So there is a very cryptic statement in the Yerushalmi that at least some Achronim interpreted to mean that would not be Bishul Derais. So the Yerushalmi uses the phrase that Asu Harchok Ol Kli Rishon. It's a phrase the Yerushalmi uses in Masechta Shabbos and other places. Asu Harchok Ol Kli Rishon. Hachokha was made for Kli Rishon. What is Hachokha? Hachokha means a din derabanan. It means a gezeira. The Chazal made a gezeira for a Kli Rishon. What does it mean they made a gezeira for Kli Rishon? Cooking in a Kli Rishon was a dis and deraisa. So what many Achorim interpreted the Yerushalmi to mean is that cooking in a Kli Rishon is only deraisa when there's a flame mamish present. Whereas once it's off the flame, so then that no longer is deraisa. That would fit very nice into Shlomo Zalman's theory that flame is so important, it's such an integral part of cooking, that not only is it not sufficient that there was once a flame, but there has to actually be a flame present right here and now. So again, that seems to be, at least according to some Achronim, what the Rishami is saying, that also a chokha l'kli rishon. That, if that's what the Rishami meant, that would also explain a big puzzle in Hilchos Bishul, which we'll probably have to wait till after the summit to talk more about. There's a very, very big problem that all the Rishonim are bothered, all the later poskim are bothered with, in terms of one of the mysteries of Hilchos Bishul. The Gemara says in the third paragraph of Masechta Shabbos that Bishul in a Kli Rishon is prohibited and Bishul in a Kli Sheni is okay. Now, if you empty the contents out of the pot and pour it into a bowl and then put the egg in, so that's mutter. Now, don't go home the next 6 weeks and start doing that because there are a lot of other things that have to go into that equation. But at least at one stage, the Gemara does say that Bishul is not violating a Kli Sheni. So Tosfos ready on the spot says, how does that work exactly? It's the same temperature. It could be even hotter than a Kli Rishon. You can have a moshel. You can have a pot that's 212 degrees. It's boiling hot, 212 degrees, and you empty the contents into a bowl, and that bowl is 205 degrees. Whereas if you have another pot that's sitting on the fire that's only 180 degrees, so one is off the fire, one's on the fire. So the Gemara seems to say that if you empty the contents into another bowl, so then there's no bishul anymore, no problems. The place says, what you said? But it's hotter than the other one. This is 205 degrees. How come there's no bishul? What's going on? So pilei ploim, so that's an age-old question that has to be answered. Again, there are many, many answers to that question. So according to the Rishalmi, that's not such a serious problem. Because according to the Rishalmi, the whole isser of Kli Rishon, whenever it's off the fire, by definition is only a derabanan. So now we understand that if it's off the fire, it's derabanan. Once you already emptied it to another pot, that's already, it's like gzera, it's like already too far removed. If I want to cook an egg in a pot that was once on the fire, that's very confusing. People are going to think, if I cook it off the fire and cook it on the fire. If you want to cook an egg in a bowl that was poured from a pot, that's already so far-fetched, so far removed, people won't get confused anymore. So So if you accept this Rishalmi, that also Achokha L'Kli Risha means that the whole institution of Kli Risha and Shloga B'Eish is only Midirabanan, that would be a tremendous kula. That would mean that any and every time that the fire is off, so then Zois Bishul, that would not be Bishul at all on a level of Diraisa. The problem is that we're not even sure that's what the Rishalmi is talking about. There are other Acharonim who had a different interpretation of the Rishalmi. Other Acharonim say that Asur Achokha L'Kli Risha means that if it's a Kli Risha, so then even though Min HaTorah it's only considered to be Bishul, if it's very, very hot, what's called Yatza Let His Bell, that if I touch my hand, I have to put my hand away, that's the Shia Bishul Min HaTorah. Maybe Min Dirabonim, the Min HaGezerah, that if it's even not as hot as that, because it's hard to tell. If it's 105 degrees, next thing you know, it'll be 125 degrees. So it could be that Asur Achokha L'Kli Risha, that if it's in a Kli Risha, even if it's not quite hot enough, Asur Gezerah. And that's what the Rishami is talking about. And the Rishami is not talking about the very institution of the Kli Risha, Shloga B'Eish. It's only talking about a Kli Risha off the fire that's not so hot anyway. So then, then it was only a Gezerah. So we're not even sure what the Rishami said. And even if the Rishami said what it said, it would appear from the Bavli that that is not correct. There are a few Gemaras scattered, one of us at the Shabbos, one of us at the Chulin, don't seem to bear out this Rishami. One of the couple of Gemaras that seem to say that once it's a Kli Risha, it's the Araisa no matter what. One of the Gemaras actually is a Gemara not even related to Shabbos, it's more related to Kashas, more related to Basa B'Cholam. The Gemara in the beginning of the 8th parak of Masechus Chulin speaks about, the Mishnah talks about the Nisim of the Rabbanan in the realm of Basa B'Cholam, that I'm not allowed to have two people sitting at the same table, one's eating meat and one's eating milk. You have to have a heker, you have to put down a separate tablecloth or a napkin, you have to put down something to differentiate between the two. But if you just have two people eating together at the same table, so that would be a problem mid the Rabbanan. What's the problem mid the Rabbanan? Because we're afraid that the two foods may get mixed up together, you're going to end up eating Basa B'Cholam by mistake. The Gemara says, what do you mean you could eat Basa B'Cholam by mistake? What's going to happen? Let's say if I'm eating a cold deli sandwich, and you're eating a cold cheese sandwich. What's going to happen? So a little bit of cheese can get into my deli. So well, it's the end of the world. It's not going to be derice anyway. In order to be bas b'chol, it has to be derech bishul. So how likely is it that you're going to mix up bas b'chol? That's going to be a derice. So we're going to make a din derabanan. Don't eat together, gzeri, you're going to end up eating a cold cheese and meat sandwich. That's highly unlikely. The Gemara says, no. The concern was that maybe each one's going to come with hot food. What do you mean it's going to come with hot food? I'm going to come with a hot sandwich. I'm going to come with a hot bowl of pasta. But anyway, it's going to be a cliche. It's going to be so far removed from the fire anyway. So it's not going to be bas b'chol derice anyway. So Gemara says, no. Shemi yalam ilfas rishon. We're afraid that I'm going to be eating out of a kli rishon, and you're going to be eating out of a kli rishon. I'm going to be eating out of my pot, and you're going to be eating out of your pot. So we're talking about a little more hamish eating. So one guy's sitting and eating shulam, not out of the bowl, he's eating shulam out of the pot, and the other guy's eating his macaroni and cheese out of the pot. Could be. So then, if some of the shulam, some of the macaroni and cheese get mixed together, then you have a chashash of bishul derice. So some of the Rad already alludes to this, and later Chorot took up and they say, wait a second, where's the Diraisa here? According, if the Rishalmi is right, that Bishul Diraisa means there's a flame, so the guy's eating, there's a flame on your spot? How you talking about is that? So some of them say, yeah, it's like the fancy restaurant, the vineyard. This guy's really Hamish. He's eating out of a pot, and there's a flame under the pot. It's like Chinese. He's taking the sterno with him. So he's eating his beef and broccoli, with the sterno under it. And the other guy's having his macaroni and cheese with his sterno under it. Oh, each one's eating agave eish. And the two klutzes are going to end up mixing up together. That's the bishul deraisa. That's what some achronim write. That must be the pshat. And others, the Ran seems to assume that's a little bit far-fetched. He says that the Rishon must not be accepted. It must be that the Baal disagrees with the Rishon. That once it's a Kli Rishon, it doesn't have to be literally agave eish. I remember... one time I was eating in a restaurant, a very fancy restaurant, so they brought out the food, mamash, with the, it's like, I'm all excited. Wow, this is the Purim Gadol. This is the restaurant Purim Gadol made at, when he describes this. Purim Gadol never dreamt of eating broccoli and beef in any place, shit, before. Okay, anyway, getting back to that story. So, the Rishami has this Baal Yechidish in Hilchos Bishul, but we're not even 100% sure that Rishami said it. That's fake. We're not sure that Rishami said it, and even if Rishami said it, we're not quite sure that we would accept it, because it's probably not accepted by the Baal. So it's generally assumed, halacha, that Bishul Deraisa can be violated even in a Kli Rishon, even if a Kli Rishon is off the fire. And again, that doesn't detract from the significance of a fire. That's just saying that the fire doesn't have to be right here and now, but it has to have been present at least at some point, either to meet Rav Moshe's criteria of being normal, or to meet the Shlomo Zalman's criteria. That's part of the definition of Eish itself. Notwithstanding the Pashtus and all the Rishonim and the later Poskim is that we don't really accept this Rishami. There is an Aruch HaShulchan that claims that the Rambam Paschal is this way. Aruch HaShulchan has it doesn't make much of a difference in the Halacha, but the Aruch HaShulchan has a whole beer, a whole alumnus in the Rambam, that he claims that the Rambam actually bought into this idea, that Bishol, in an area, if you can't see the fire, there's no fire right here and now, so then maybe that would only be a Bishol Durabana. But again, we generally don't assume that way. So we assume the Halacha that cooking in a Kli Rishon, whether it's on the fire or off the fire, we're dealing with a potential Bishol Deraisa, which really sets the stage for the major question we'll have to wait for a few weeks from now. And that's the issue of, in terms of, once you're telling me that Bishol Kli Rishon is a very, very serious problem, hocus pocus, how did Kli Sheni become with them? How can the Gemara say, Kli Sheni, yeah, that's okay, that's fine, nothing to worry about. So how does that happen? That's Tosa's question, that's the Rishon's question. If Kli Sheni is at least as hot as a Kli Rishon, or could sometimes be hotter, if it's spotted out hotter, so then it's hotter than the equivalent Kli Rishon. How are you talking that something could be cooked in a Kli Sheni, that's okay, and cooked in a Kli Rishon, it's aser, if one is actually hotter than the other? So we have to hopefully address that question. That's a fundamental question. And the whole issue of Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni is going to open up for us many, many discussions in terms of the intricacies of Hilchos Mishnah. Okay, so we'll take a little break for a while. Okay.
Really fast, for those that
have not
been at the
7:20
conference, so next week, you will.